I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hello everybody and welcome to the last ever review of an Emmanuel in Space movie from your frosty fellas. It's your boys, Timbo and Guy Guy. And we've just finished... Ah, crap. What was this one called, Guy?
We've just finished Emmanuel 7, The Meaning of Love.
The meaning of love. We're back in lockdown too, so we're apart.
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah, the Emmanuel theme song, which you have been singing pretty much since we began this call until recording, and even then sometime during the record, is sort of, it's now reached the sort of Pavlovian worst idea of all time dread. You might remember from such films as Grown Ups 2, Sex and the City 2, Sex and the City 1, We Are Your Friends. That is, it's sort of seeped into the inner mechanics of my brain and represents something to be feared. And today, Tim, that fear was somewhat well-founded because Emmanuel 7, The Meaning of Love, is a totally unearned flashback episode.
Well, I actually thought it was kind of nice to end our trip with a reminder of what the trip has been.
Really?
Yeah, I kind of liked the little walk down memory lane.
But the idea that this series is building towards, like, you know, some sort of articulation of what love is. I mean, suggested in the very title, The Meaning of Love. And then instead, they're just like, remember all of these times and places we fucked? Oh boy, didn't we have some laughs along the way. See you later, Emmanuel. Off you go back to Earth.
Do you reckon any other pornos, like, treat their franchise like this?
Well, the guy, there was a producer involved with this Emmanuel, who is, I don't know if other softcore franchises do the same, but I think his fingerprints are all over this one, and he's also, he helms the next few installments of Emmanuel. So I think maybe in these ones, because they've obviously got a formula they're working towards, and it is kind of working for them. But I think probably the question is less about softcore pornos and more about general franchises. How many franchises would build towards a climax, which is a
pardon the pun?
Yeah, which is a double entendre. What entendre is French for meaning, I guess.
Yeah, that's probably right.
The French language cracks me up.
Intent, maybe. No, it's probably not right.
Anyway.
Like double intent.
But how many franchises across any medium would build to a climax that is then just them rehashing all of the build-up they've provided? It is disrespectful.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's cost-effective, isn't it? Which, at the end of the day, we've got to pay some attention to production itself, as an entity.
Are we engaging with this franchise as producers or punters?
It's hard to say.
Are we, you know, engaging with this as people who are crunching the numbers and pushing pencils, or a couple of guys penises in hand, just trying to make ends meet.
We open with Trisha, who is sometimes called Tasha and sometimes called Trisha, which is really apparent considering we've got a mashup of all the six previous movies.
It can be difficult to remember a character's name across multiple installments.
Tasha and Trisha, whichever her name is, appears in Bullfight in Spain and manages to bag a matador on a shag pile rug in a like cold, stony room after being told to leave several times.
Yeah.
And she can't be in there because she's a woman. And I was trying to figure out, is this a dream sequence at the start? Is that her
I think it's not a dream sequence. I think she was like, before everyone else comes to the motherboard and starts an honest day's labor on the sexy spaceship, I think Trisha or Tasha, whatever you want to call her, got up early, had a steaming hot cup of Java, and just punched in like half an hour before everyone else to go fuck a matador in Spain. And for me, Tim, it was a case of deja vu all over again, because I could swear to God someone had already had sex with a matador in this.
Yeah, I mean, it was her, right?
Was it?
Well, yeah, that's the whole, I mean, everything in this movie is we're just seeing stuff
that's
happened in the previous
six. Before they'd even introduced the, let me remind you of what you've learned by showing
this
you everything
again. This is how I remind you of how we did fuck.
Yeah. I sort of, the matador scene was kind of funny. It was hot
and a good actor. Pretty much everyone sucks at acting in this, but I reckon that matador was pretty good.
She was awful. Trisha or Tasha was doing
fucking bad.
Such a bad job. She was like delivering her lines like a robot.
Yeah.
The way you danced with the beast, it was incredible. And then he starts nuzzling her knee and she pretty much has an orgasm on impact. And I really enjoyed the way that they would intercut the matador and Trisha having sex, yeah, with footage of an actual bullfight in case we sort of missed the metaphor that they were slamming into our face with a fucking shovel.
Yeah, well, she literally was like waving a red cloth in front of him, right? And they had a little bit of that going on. Yeah, man, I hated that, and I hated Trish. Or Tasha, depends what her name is.
But so yeah,
and that footage, because Tom Walker brought this up in the last episode. Whenever they use footage, and they use it a lot, like some stock footage, it's the lowest res, shittest looking stuff.
I know, but
it's so bad.
I kind of liked that it was low res. It was also like almost inspiring to me, where I was like, you know. You can pretend anything's anywhere if you just buy 1 cent stock footage off the internet and you're like,
yeah,
ha, I'm in Spain. Insert Shutterstock image of Barcelona.
Yeah, man. And it's like, it is quite inspiring because back in the day, they didn't have access to the internet.
Yeah.
Not really. Not to buy footage like this. They had to probably, they'd have some Hollywood marketplace where you get it. But we could make our own porno guy and we could set it anywhere by simply spending a few $100 on some footage of the Florida Keys.
I think the setting and the archival footage of the Florida Keys is less of interest in the world where we're making a porno than the actual porn component of our porno.
Mm, could be right.
I think, what would it be? It'd be like friendship porn. Just a couple of guys sitting down, getting along, bearing their souls.
Maybe we would write a really good porno.
Someone recently was criticizing the way that men hug to me. She was saying, why do men hug like that? Because I think we were watching some sort of some lads walking down a street and they hugged.
Mm.
But their shoulders get close together and their arms wrap around each other, but they keep their waists and legs at distance. And she was like, do men hug like that so that they don't touch penises?
Yeah, I think so.
But I was saying, I don't...
It's not a conscious decision, but I'd say that's probably
not correct. All men hug like that. Some of my best hugs I have with the lads.
Hashtag, not all men.
That's right. I believe we are using that correctly.
Mm-hmm.
As we always are.
Sorry, some of your best hugs, tip to tip?
Yeah, yeah. Well, not even deliberately tip to tip, but just oblivious to the placement of respective tips. Just a nice, hearty hug with a friend. You know, because when you got a friend in need, sometimes what they need is a hug. And sometimes what a hug needs is the tips of a couple of penises gently, platonically, pressing up against each other through four layers of fabric. In this world, both men are wearing underpants and shorts or trousers.
It was a nice reminder of all of the lands that we've traveled to throughout the previous half dozen episodes. The Arc de Triomphe makes an appearance. The Golden Gate Bridge, that famous Full House intro. You know, I'm half expecting the Tanner family to pop up, but instead we've got a naked woman having sex with an alien.
A Full House porn parody set in the adult world of Full House.
It should be called Full Frontal House.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense, but it's also grotesque. And I regret even opening up the world.
Whatever happened to respectability? The milkman, the paper boy.
A roll inside me.
Delivery. Actually, I reckon that's good. It's just a selection of people coming to the Tanner house. Like, well, yeah, no, this is fucked up, though. So who's having the sex? Well, didn't Stephanie... Did Stephanie do... Yes. Yeah. God, it's such an undesirable watch, you know. Did the young woman who played Stephanie go on to do adult films, or did I make that up?
No, I don't know that you made that up, but I also can't remember the particulars. I know that the fallout of being a child star was not easy for the actor. That I do remember.
But I think she had some addiction problems.
I believe so too. But let's, you know, instead of diving into the world of the pitfalls of huge success young, what I'm going for is moderate success very slowly into my old age, and even moderate's probably being generous. Let us instead talk about the lands that they visited and the reason for visiting these lands, because this is there's an element of finality to this episode. Emmanuel in space. We see Trisha having sex with the Matador. We're back on the spaceship, and Hafron and Emmanuel and everyone is there, and they're saying, hey, this is it. We've come to the end of the road, and before we part, it's important we reflect upon where we've been, we reflect upon lessons learned, and to do that, why don't we just watch the footage back? And that's exactly what they do. And Hafron keeps hammering the idea that, you know, and they touched on this in the last episode, that humans are so unlike anyone they've seen. They're so full of contradictions, and, you know, we try and dominate each other through warfare. Love and sex is a very complicated experience that, you know, he hasn't seen the likes of, and it will be very difficult for him to explain this on his home planet. And all this got me to thinking, do you know the franchise I'd like to see spun out of this would be, because it sounds like the planet they come from, sexuality doesn't exist. So their return to this planet, enlightened by sexuality. Also, we don't know what corporeal form they take on their home planet. They only look like humans because they are mimicking where they were visiting.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see Emmanuel go back with them to their home planet and try to learn how they fuck, or whatever the equivalent version of it is.
Well, we know that they don't. They definitely don't have sex. Because of the speech that we got in the, I think, the very last outing of Emmanuel in space. Hafron was talking about how, like, humans invent a lot of stuff because they've got passions and they fuck and they get angry. But it creates a lot of inventiveness, and that they don't have that on their planet. And he said previously that they don't, like, no one else really goes around the universe warring with each other. That's just a human thing that we do.
Do you think the reason that Hafron species travel through the galaxy inspecting others and we don't in this world, or as I understand it in general, is because we do have sex to distract ourselves with, sex and procreation? And so instead of building a spaceship and being as far ahead in terms of matching our intelligence to our ability to travel through space, we constantly hamstring ourselves by having sex for pleasure, also having sex for procreation, and then tending to our spawn, our progeny.
Nah, I reckon it's encouraging us to go to space. There's there's a whole school of thought that a lot of human progress has been because we live or have lived so far, not solely, but by and large in a very patriarchal society, that it's just dudes building monuments either to their own genitals or to try and impress women and be like, see, I've got the biggest schlong building. And that gets taken to space exploration as well, because what does a rocket look like? Especially these new ones. Looks like a big dick exploring space.
So what?
So without this focus on
are
genitals.
Are you saying, Tim, that the only reason we've gotten anything done is because of the patriarchy?
No, not at all.
Because it sounds like that's what you're saying.
No, some other people have said that. Oh, I wouldn't say that.
It sounds like that's what you're parroting.
I was just trying to come up with a counterpoint to what you were saying. I don't know if it makes any sense.
I was just imagining that Heffron is so thrown by the fact that we're all having sex and whatnot, and also like seems to be so impressed by us and how, I don't know that contented is the right word, but like self-contained humans and earthers, you know? We're creating such a mess for ourselves on Earth that there's no need or desire to go beyond it. The only person who's really looking into that right now is Elon Musk, who's like, man, I'm done here.
Musk is getting all the press, but Bezos is trying.
Really?
He's got a space program as well.
What's it called?
Trying to get out. I can't remember. I don't know what his one's called. Elon's SpaceX, right?
Yeah.
It's his big schlong rockets.
Yeah. Big schlong rockets.
You know what we need to get back to, though, is the ocean. People stop paying attention to the ocean. We still don't know that much about it.
We don't explore it very much. Didn't stop thinking about the ocean. James Cameron, that guy is obsessed with the ocean.
Yeah.
All he wants to do is make Avatar movies on a timeline of his choosing and go as far underwater as is humanly possible.
I mean, it's pretty crazy that it took a successful Hollywood director to have the resources and inclination to rediscover the Titanic. You know, the Titanic was a pretty big deal. We talk about it a lot, but no one had found the like biggest, most significant part of the wreck until James Cameron was like, I'm going to go find it. And then he fucking did.
Yeah.
He's a film director. It's crazy.
We wouldn't talk about it as much as we do if not for James Cameron. He made a movie literally reintroducing the memory of it to the conversation. It's like, hey, do you guys remember this?
Know,
and everyone was like, I don't know, James. And he was like, I think you're going to fucking remember this.
Do you really think the movie has a lot to do with why we kind of think about it and talk about it?
100%. Before the movie Titanic came out, I didn't know the Titanic existed.
Are you serious?
Of course I'm fucking serious. I was like 7. I didn't care about a ship sailing from Ireland to New York.
That's crazy. It was like, I feel like it's one of those big things like dinosaurs and space when you're a kid. There's like a whole thing on natural disasters where you learn about
the
Hindenburg and Titanic, the big three.
Those are not, Titanic's not a natural disaster.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not a natural disaster.
I guess it was caused by an iceberg, though.
Yeah, it was caused by a ship driving into an iceberg. Not by like an iceberg springing itself on a ship.
Oh, it depends who you ask. If you ask the captain.
Well, you can't, can you? Because, it's so funny. It's like a good captain always goes down with his ship. And his entire track record is that this guy's a pretty lousy captain. He has every reason to try and survive.
That's a good point. If your ship's going down, I think you've got your get out of jail free card because you're no longer a good captain. You got permission to bail at that point.
Yeah. So a noble captain lives with the consequences.
Speaking of getting on the water, we got a delightful flashback to the Emmanuel in Space episode where they're on the riverboat casino. I assume it's a casino. Why else would you have a boat like that you're going to stay on for more than one day?
I hated that. That was the first or second one where Heffron was learning about sex and sexuality, and he was like learning how to fuck and having sex. I felt physically ill watching Heffron, this like with the mentality of a child, learn about having sex with other people. I genuinely, I hated it. It made me realize I was grateful for the character development that they'd imbued him with. It was like, at least by the end of the franchise, we're dealing with a flawed but rounded adult. Watching like a grown man pretend to have the mental aptitude of a 9-year-old while having sex with a myriad of adult women is, to call it a boner,
kind of horrifying,
to call it a boner killer would be wrong because there was no boner to kill Tim.
Yeah, they do the same thing with Theo as well. Again and again, he's like this comedy man-child character, but he does get his end off sometimes.
He was comedy the whole way through. You observed it to me that all of his escapades are scored by...
It's like a bassoon or something. I said it was a tuba in my message, but I think, it's some big, deep horn instrument and like that kind of, there's a very specific scale you can do on an electric organ where it's just like, this is comet. It's like being at a clown show and every scene that has Theo in it, they score it in that way. I actually do think though that he's a character ripe for a spin-off because although the concept of him having sex is disgusting to me, and quite repellent, because despite the fact that he would be quite hot if he just didn't say anything, they've made this character kind of, as you're saying with Heffron, he's like, it's just putting a 6-year-old in an adult's body, which is a pretty gross line to play with for adult sex. But he is very funny, and he's a like big physical performer, and all his like movements and scenes that he's in, he really does dial that comedy knob up, and I think he's got the wherewithal to carry his own franchise.
You mean the actor within the character as well? Because
that character,
he's
Theo.
That guy is in Realty now.
What's Realty?
He's a realtor.
Oh, right, gotcha. I thought there was like
I've
a
been
series
on his
about
Instagram.
Real estate agents.
He's in the top 500 realtors in California or something, and he's looking forward to a COVID-free 2021. So the guys
we all
plugged in and switched on.
Speaking of back catalogs as well, I was looking up Heffron, discovered that he is in Basketball briefly.
Paul Michael Robinson.
His name is my name too. He's also in Bruce Almighty.
Really?
Which is interesting.
Because Krista Allen's also starred in a Jim Carrey vehicle.
Exactly. She's in Liar Liar. So I'm thinking, is Jim Carrey casting his films from Emmanuel in Space?
No, but
maybe.
Jim Carrey's off the... You know, he's Jim Carrey in space as far as I can tell right now. That guy's on a different planet.
Is he? What's he up to?
He just published it's called a novel. It's like a...
this is like a manifesto? Or?
Yeah, it's like a blended memoir, but mostly fictionalized. He co-wrote with some author, and I listened to a podcast about its writing, and it sounded, I don't know, full on. He's full on. Jim Carrey, childhood idol, full on dude.
Yeah, do you think people not from New Zealand understand what that saying means? Because I say it often, and I wonder. Yeah. I guess it means intense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And usually, like, way too intense.
Yeah, it was pretty full on in New Zealand, is like saying it was too much, which is probably also a colloquialism. You're too much. What else have we got to discuss within the actual world of Emmanuel 7, the meaning of love? Tim, I put it to you. What is the meaning of love as learned by these seven softcore pornography films?
Well, I'm just remembering the great advice and discussions that we had on the ship in between the scenes of flashing back to the previous six movies while we dissected the lessons learned. One is that sex and love are two different things. Another is that according to Emmanuel, what was she saying?
Emmanuel, who I continue to believe is a pretty sound teacher. Like for someone that they just picked up on the side of the road, as an instructor for an entire alien species on human love and sex, they could have done a lot worse.
Hell yeah. And to get a bit more meta on it as well, Krista Allen also. I can say this now, we're at the end of the road of her run of Emmanuel. I think she did a fantastic job. She was given such crazy scripts, such terrible actors to work against. And Heffron gets a turn in this one. We're right at the end of the movie. It's like, I'm not fully sure what happened, but at the very, very end, Krista Allen is like, okay, I'm back to Earth now. You guys are going to bugger off to the rest of the galaxy or the universe and keep exploring. So this is the end of our time together. So Krista Allen is on a pier. I'm not sure where she is. Let's say Santa Monica. And she's looking through a telescope and she sees all of these people enjoying their lives and activities. And it's kind of like, hey, you're back. You can be back part of the world. You could be on a boat. You could be on the beach. You could go swimming. And then she spies someone who looks exactly like Heffron fishing off the pier. And she goes to walk over to him and she's like, are you Heffron? And he goes, no, I wish I was though. Because obviously she's a beautiful woman who's just come up to him randomly. And she says, do you want to get a cup of coffee? And he says, I don't drink coffee. Oh, wait a minute. Sure, that sounds really nice. And his, because we've never quite known if the guy portraying Heffron was a bad actor or if he was just making some choices for this alien that's a dumb shit.
Yeah, yeah.
But it turns out the kid can't act.
Yeah.
And we know that now.
I know. I actually went on his, there's this website called peoplepill.com. And on
sounds good.
Paul Michael Robinson's website, there's a paragraph on his time at Emmanuel in Space, which reads, Paul was cast as the lead opposite Krista Allen in the erotic epic Emmanuel in Space. The role enabled him to show that he had quite a presence as an actor and comedian. It also allowed him to showcase his physical attributes and beauty. Emmanuel in Space remains one of the pioneering softcore films and continues to find new audiences and fans. I totally agree with you, Tim. For 7 episodes, we were like, maybe he's just doing a really good job of portraying this stilted person or alien who doesn't quite jive with, you know, being a person. And then they gave him a chance at the very end. And if they'd left it out,
We'd never know.
We'd be like, well, you know, he made some decisions. He stuck with them. Good on him. But at the end, they're like, and by the way, your instincts were right. This guy can't act. Also, I thought it was so arrogant of Heffron because I feel like he teed all of this up. It's like he's had this really open-minded teacher, this incredible experience traveling through Earth, having sex with a variety of people, usually sort of gravitating back towards Emmanuel. They had some sort of bond that transcended just instructor and pupil. And then she's like, all right, guys, time to go. And everyone on the ship's like, ah, it might be a bit dicey for you, Emmanuel. Remember how the FBI or, you know, remember how these people were after us? And Emmanuel's like, nah, I got to go back to Earth. And so they don't talk about it. She doesn't ask for anything. They just drop her on a pier in Santa Monica, which seems insane. Like, you'd probably put her back in her house, but okay. She takes that totally in stride. They leave some hints to find out, you know, like for, I don't know, they leave there's a quarter on the pier and she puts it into one of those telescopes, as you've said, and finds this Heffron lookalike. I'm like, Heffron, you fucking arrogant prick. Like, you've just set this woman free from being an instructor on your spaceship. You know, you've turned her back out into the world to find love with whoever she so chooses. And you've created or like imbued this person to look exactly like you, as though the first thing she's going to want to do after spending all this time on the spaceship is continue having sex with someone who has exactly your physical characteristics.
That's so true, man. Boy, is that true. If you've been eating ice cream for a week and nothing but, and then they're like, you can eat whatever you want now, you're going to go back to ice cream? I don't think so.
Yeah.
Even if it's ice cream, you don't want it.
That's right. Too much of anything.
Too much Heffron.
I also wanted to talk about that, the sort of that quarter that you put in the binoculars or telescope so you can see around.
It looked like a dime to me. It was cheap. I don't think it was a quarter. It must have been a quarter.
I always assume it's a quarter. But like,
must have been a quarter.
I remember I used one of those equivalents at a building in Athens, Greece once. And it's like you put a quarter into like binoculars at a very high or useful viewing vantage point. And the binoculars were just pointing directly into like apartment buildings way, way, way away. And I was like, this feels illegal, and kind of crazy. And Emmanuelle was doing it too, where she put the quarter and started pointing the telescope at the beach. It's like all these people on the beach, hundreds of meters away, who have no idea someone is just observing them. Like,
isn't that funny?
And it's up like, close detail.
Because those like telescopes and binoculars are all over the world and are coin operated, and they're always portrayed in film and television with these very romantic, kind of glamorous notions that you're in a metropolitan city, you want to see the sights, you want to like do some people watching. But ultimately, it's just incredibly voyeuristic and a massive invasion of privacy.
Massively. It's spying. And I always think about...
And they're at the beach often as well. So you're just vulnerable. Looking at all these half-naked people.
Yeah. Spying, when you're a child, you can get given like a spy kit and you're taught to like dust for fingerprints and use binoculars and a magnifying glass and all this stuff. And then at some point, we're like, unless you're going to become a professional spy, it's like we do not do any of that stuff. We do not snoop. We do not look at other people if they don't know. It is... Yeah. Wholly inappropriate. You're like, well, maybe you shouldn't have literally armed me with the exact equipment to learn how to do this in my formative years.
Yeah, and really romanticize the notion to me that this is what we should all be doing as adults. That is a weird thing we give to kids. Why do we do that?
It's fun to be a snoop.
Because there's just a lot of toys involved, isn't there? A lot of cheap accoutrement. Mm. You have a magnifying glass, a notepad.
Have you ever solved a crime?
God, I wish that I had. I don't think I've solved a single crime in my whole crummy life.
Mm.
I'm trying to think. I haven't had a lot of interaction with police, to be honest.
Mm.
I haven't been arrested yet, which is good.
You say yet.
Yeah. Shit, yeah. You got to give... Well, I think you've at least got to get arrested once or a couple times in your life.
I don't think you do.
I think I will honestly consider my life a failure if I never get arrested. If I don't get arrested once, I'll be like, fucking hell, man. Sort it out.
Okay.
I'll be gutted. I'll be absolutely gutted.
That's a very
gutted.
Sort of Kiwi attitude, I think.
Yeah, perhaps.
White Kiwi attitude.
I don't know about that. I've been watching... I often watch a lot of documentaries about activists. I'm like, fuck yeah.
True.
Go get amongst.
Mm.
Fuck up some police.
Yeah, man. You got to put that on record before you do it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So that they can play it back in the courts and be like, his intent was bad.
So you've not solved a crime?
Don't think I've ever solved a crime.
Sometimes
I had a flashback to when... This was one of the... I cannot think of a time... Oh, this is top three saddest I've ever been. I think I was like 9 years old. My dad went to England and came back and bought us these beautiful, what the Americans would call a fanny pack.
Bum bag.
A bum bag made of, it was like a suede-y kind of material, I think. It was kind of leather suede-y thing. Mm. It was so nice for a kid to have. And I put all my marbles in there, and then it got stolen at school, and I was just beside myself.
You would
myself.
Be. Understandable. And to this day, position. The crook roams free.
Yeah, they were never fingered, as I like to say. We never managed to finger that criminal.
Kids love...
Because it is a crime. I don't care if you're 7 years old. If you stole something, you're a criminal.
It's a... for life?
Yeah, I guess so.
Kids love marbles, huh? They love those little balls of marble.
Well, they're glass. They were a real currency back in the day. And I don't know if people still kind of mess with them. But it is an artifact from my youth that does make me sound like I am 80.
Yeah, no, well, you'd be surprised. In this very house in which I live, one of the residents, who is 5, loves marbles, has no practical application for them, doesn't, like, know what to do with them beyond putting them in a little coin purse, walking around, showing them to people, taking them out, putting them back in.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Do you reckon there's something in our DNA that attracts us to like gemstones and things that look like them?
I guess. Or
because we've got all these like myths
versus
and
nurture style question there.
But there's just too much convergent culture that is all about us wanting like shiny, precious stones.
Mm.
I'm mainly basing this on a video essay that I watched while I was supposed to be doing work yesterday, comparing the Avengers movies to the Justice League DC equivalent and how they're like identical. It's just all the same thing. And it's all centered around like these fucking gemstones or a magic box. And there's so much like myth and legend from all over the world, like completely divergent cultures that really like shiny stones and magical
Dragon
boxes.
Ball Z,
mm.
Pokemon, you're collecting badges.
Pokemon's a bit different, but yeah, Pokemon's a bit more animal centric, which is nice. It's about living things.
Love to see
rather than property.
There must be some really good bestial Pokemon erotic fan fiction.
Oh yeah, I guess so.
I'd love to see a Nidoking and a Nidoqueen just absolutely going hammer and tongs.
I reckon it'd be. Have you seen footage of those turtles from the Galapagos Islands? And they make those crazy sounds. They're like, ooh. They try to mount each other over and over again, but their shells get in the way.
I've not seen that. But
oh man, the sounds.
Yeah, hearing that noise is as good a time as any to remind me that I've got a visitor. Boner Inspector!
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, sir.
I'd like to inspect your undergarments, please.
Man, I'm so sorry to report that I didn't get a boner because that means that I've gone through the entire manual in space with that one. Though, can I tell you who I thought like sort of deserved one was it was a beautiful person on the ship.
Mm.
I don't care. Oh, I think her name's Kara, and she's like the only person who can act among the aliens.
Dude,
and she's very beautiful.
Dude, right there with you. When she's like telling Heffron, she's like, we can show the people on our planet what we've learned. And Heffron's like,
yes.
What? And she's like, we can show them.
Yeah.
And she is beautiful, but also acting with such supreme ability and confidence that it's like you're pulled into a different movie where you're like,
oh. It's crazy because you kind of forget that anyone can act when you're watching the movie and then someone does a good job. You're like, oh, fuck, I forgot. That's right.
I thought she was fantastic. Tim, because we're apart and I had to get up early this morning,
mm-hmm.
and I was umming and ahhing over whether to tell you this, I was like, yeah. Do you know what? I might actively try and get a boner watching the movie today.
Okay.
And I didn't.
Ah. When you say actively try, you mean like physical intervention?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean intervening with my own body. Like,
well, do you know what?
I guess because this dates back to our first season of the podcast when professional film critic Dom Corey came in and he said, one of the important things you have to do when you're watching or reviewing a film is engage with it on its terms.
Yeah.
Tim, these movies are not designed to be watched. These movies are designed to be watched while
jacking it.
Jacking it.
Yeah. You didn't do that today?
I didn't do it.
If you did, though,
I was not inspired to.
I respect the fact that you did wait till we weren't physically together. Because you know what? I probably wouldn't have loved that.
Yeah.
Real Pee Wee Herman situation going on in the podcast studio.
Part of what inspired the notion, the very possibility that it was on the cards. But alas, I didn't. Again, not unlike yourself, it's like it was a whisper of a bone. It was like this. Yeah, it was like that when there was that acting taking place. But alas, I'm sorry. We must release the boater inspector once again. I mean, this guy's got a very formal, beautiful leather-bound notebook, and all he wants to do is write down and observe.
I know. He's got a whole train.
A single boner, or
got a whole train to check out.
I guess as Demi would put it, a clunge plunge, or some sort of horrible turn of phrase.
How dare you vilify Demi for bringing in a thesaurus
of
words to describe the female form. We also found out, just you and I, not the movie watcher us, but us doing our background research, that Heffron was he an army ranger? He was in...
Yeah, this is all on the popular website peoplepill.com under Paul Michael Robinson's entry. He was... He served in the United States Army and was stationed at Fort Stewart, Georgia. He was in the 3rd Battalion, 15th Infantry, specializing in comms. He was out before Desert Storm.
You fucking loser. Get out just before a big operation like that.
I don't even know what Desert Storm was.
It was the original incursion into Iraq, I think.
And was this a good idea?
The first Gulf War. Well, I mean, it was successful, I think, ultimately, but a lot of innocent people died. So how do you want to
sounds like
you want to measure your military actions?
Success.
Yeah.
Goddamn US military. This entire movie, it was kind of interesting because it was told in flashback. It was a composite. It was like, you know, The Simpsons would do occasional episodes like that, or Friends, the two television memories that stick out. But this one, like the audio quality was different whenever Krista Allen and Paul Michael Robinson or Emmanuel and Heffron were reminiscing about it. It was honestly a lot like hearing the actors give us a director's commentary in character. But they were just sort of remembering times and places they'd fucked.
Yeah, which would have been a way better experience if this genuinely the last movie was just them.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Or even just a behind the scenes, like a Peter Jackson style Lord of the Rings DVD featurette.
I hear that.
See them fucking around with each other.
I mean, we've watched now the complete Emmanuel in Space collection, the DVD 7-pack. First Contact, A World of Desire, A Lesson in Love, Concealed Fantasy, A Time to Dream, One Last Fling, and The Meaning of Love.
One Last Fling. Which, ironically, was in the middle of the series.
Mm.
Do you have a favorite out of all seven?
One of the early ones, I think. I can't actually differentiate between them exactly. But maybe... either, like, probably a world... Probably it was A World of Desire or A Lesson in Love. But it was around the time when we had that comedy director in. And the franchise was still fresh. And actually, when we were back on the Riverboat Casino, I remember enjoying that. Like, we were reunited with the bartender who hated Heffron for continually having sex with different ship passengers. And also, like, the chaos of Heffron having sex with everyone and then all of it blowing up in his face. It was, like, a sort of enjoyable, caperish storyline to break up the monotony of the sex.
Yeah. It was my favorite as well, because it actually had some stakes, and Heffron and Emmanuel had a falling out. And Emmanuel, I mean, Heffron was really fucking around there, doing a lot of shape-shifting, doing a lot of tricking.
Yeah. Speaking of which, there's a nice little moment at the end of this movie when they were trying to figure out how Emmanuel would go back to Earth and stay safe. And Heffron was like, wow, we can just change how you look, and starts like ripping through different women. Like, he just,
that was so messed up.
He was using his remote to just be like, you could look like this or this or this, and there's just all these different reflections of
you're changing the complete physical composition of a human being. Like, you're changing the channel on a television set. And Emmanuel was like slightly perturbed. I would have been a lot angrier.
She took it in stride.
Someone was doing that to me.
As is her want.
Mm.
Well, it seems appropriate that at the end of the Emmanuel in Space franchise, we introduce our friend George to offer you or I the opportunity to perhaps articulate what you might like to see for a porno in space. So, George, will you come on in?
Ah, yes. Hello. It's me, George Lazenby.
George Lazenby, it's so good to hear your voice.
Well, it's so good to have my voice and my ability to listen.
I've got a concept for you for a film franchise. Ooh. This isn't just one picture. This is at least a four-picture deal.
Fantastic.
Have you seen the Emmanuel in Space movies?
Hold on. Yes, the very thought of it's enough to give me a sneeze, otherwise known as 1/8 of an orgasm.
I just want to double check, George Lazenby. Have you had a COVID swab? Have you been?
No, I don't believe in COVID.
Okay, good to know. Good addition. All right. Well, thank God that we're conducting
this. My meals have been quite
bland
recently, though.
Yeah, why is that?
I don't know. I keep going out to restaurants and. Doesn't matter how much salt or pepper or spice I put on the food, I can't taste a damn thing.
Right. How's your sense of smell at the moment, George Lazenby?
What sense of smell?
Okay. All right. Well, hopefully you've still got your sense of film taste, because I think you're
going
to love this.
That's not going anywhere.
Do you remember popular icon of the Emmanuel in Space episodes, Theo?
Yes.
Butt of many jokes on the mothership. Comedy caper extraordinaire, scene stealer.
I bought my house from that horny hound.
Oh, true, because he's now in real estate. Well, here's what I'm thinking. I want to revive the character of Theo and give him his own softcore porn franchise. And it's called Theo and the Boys.
Okay.
Theo is part of a collection of friends. There's five friends, and they're all guys from the ship. So we see them as human beings, but actually they're aliens. They've decided to mutiny from Hafron and leave the ship and come to Earth. So they are, through each successive movie, trying to bob and weave, having the best time that they possibly can, and engage with huge famous kind of cultural events that people go through in their lives. Things like spring break, things like Mardi Gras, things like an inauguration, places where you get drunk and
fucking
shack
suck
up with a bunch of yeah, exact. So you get it. But all the while, there's a cat and mouse element to this, because they are being tracked by Hafron and the mothership as well, and some three-letter agencies on Earth who are aware of the aliens' presence but can never quite catch up to them because they're constantly being
outwitted. It sounds
outwitted.
Like you're borrowing fairly heavily from the Emmanuel in Space franchise.
Yeah, this is kind of a spun-off, you know, Theo-headed vehicle.
Yeah.
For an extension
and
to the franchise.
And do we see Theo's head? Cockhead?
Cockhead, yeah, we see his cockhead. Absolutely, because it's now the year 2021, and if we want to make a dent against any of this internet traffic where you can get pornography for free from all stripes and levels of intensity, we're going to need to see full pain.
Yeah, and maybe Theo has some sort of misunderstanding with a step-sibling or relative.
Well, I like how involved you're getting with the story pitching of this, George. Tell me more.
Well, he meets someone who's a half-alien, half-human hybrid, and he says, oh, this is interesting. And the half-alien, half-human hybrid says, I think your mum and my dad have got married. And he says,
so it's like a step alien.
Yeah. And he says, I'm getting a little confused around the bloodlines here, because if the person is half alien, you know, there's a pretty high chance they're actually related. But either way, they find it all very confusing and arousing. And maybe they have sex at an inauguration. And then when they get kicked out of the inauguration, they go to Mardi Gras and they have sex there.
You're getting it. Exactly. Exactly. And then on to spring break and then to Sydney, Australia for schoolies. I think that happens somewhere else, actually. Coast, yeah, that's right.
Sure. I get it.
They take a road trip from Sydney to the Gold Coast in a car. It's pretty full on.
We need to hammer out some of the finer details, but the broad strokes have me broadly stroking myself.
Very good. All right. Well, George, do we have a deal?
Yeah, man. See ya. Lovely guy. Really good guy.
Well, I'm glad we could get something across the line. I feel like
he can be.
He's actually a fair judge. You know what I mean? Like, he won't green light total shit. Yeah. But he'll tell you when you're onto something.
Unpredictable, and some of the stuff he's into is borderline. But yeah, shout out to George Lazenby.
Shout
out. The last real Bond.
All right. Well, look. Let's stop talking. Let's end this episode.
Okay. I'm done. Yeah, great.
But before we do go, we simply must tell you about the live stream that is happening in just a few days. This is a live table read of the pilot episode of the new Sex and the City season that Guy and I have penned. It is fantastic, and it's going to feature some of our comedy friends. And it's also supporting not just us, but also a Brooklyn-based theatre called Littlefield, who have hosted us previously, and I can say this confidently, the good guys.
Yeah, they are. So it depends where you are, but I'm going to imagine right now you're in America. So this Thursday, at the on the 18th of February, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time or 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, that is when the live stream is taking place in New Zealand. That is 3 p.m. on Friday, the 19th of February. In other places like the UK, it is at the unwatchable and unusable time of 3 a.m.
But you will be able to get it after the fact.
That's right.
We're going to sort something out so that you can see it after the fact. And I can't announce who it is, but we have got a very, very, very special guest who will be moderating a Q&A for us on the live stream. So do join us.
Absolutely worth getting along for that alone. If you want tickets and you don't already have them, head along to worstideaofalltime.com/stream.
It's cheap. It's eight US dollars. And that's just a recommended donation.
That's right. So we look forward to seeing you.
Yeah.
Being online at the same time as you in a known capacity.
We'll see you. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author Elizabeth Gilbert about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.